This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, Alyssa Walker-Campbell. Welcome back. SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show on this Friday night, the next generation of sports radio. Before we get underway with our next segment, think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. They are close, convenient, and they are known for their guaranteed everyday low price. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store today. O'Reilly's, better parts, better prices every single day. All right, so as I promised, it is time for some PGA news and notes, and that continues. Tonight, we are actually going to shine the spotlight on Tiger Woods, a brand new biography on him that has just been released. With our next guest, he will pull back the curtain and provide some insight on his personal, his professional life. And we are so delighted to have with us for the very first time, New York Times bestselling author and CBS news correspondent, that is Armin Katayan, who teamed up with his colleague, that is author Jeff Benedict, and produced a compelling new biography, a comprehensive account of Tiger's life. You definitely want to get a copy of it. Good evening, Armin. It's nice to have you on the show.
My pleasure.
Okay, well, congratulations on your latest release. It is extraordinary, for sure, and we're going to take a deep dive into that. But first and foremost, let's hit on some timing things here in terms of this renaissance that has taken place with Tiger Woods. What has he shown you so far in 2018? It's been an incredible turnaround.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you would have just gone back to last Memorial Day weekend, where Florida Police Department in Jupiter, Florida, found him slumped against the wheel of his Mercedes sports car. He was completely out of it and had kind of a rock star cocktail of pain-killing drugs and mood-altering drugs in his system. You know, given the arc of his life to that point, you would have thought, well, this is sort of this is not going to end well. In any way, shape, or form for Tiger. You started to think about, you know, Michael Jackson in terms of child stars who end up in pretty deep, dark holes in their life. But he's healthy. For the first time in 5 years, the spinal fusion surgery actually worked, and it worked remarkably, a miracle, as Tiger called it. And I think more important, Alyssa, is that Tiger is I witnessed him at Torrey Pines at the end of January 2018, uh-huh. And he was more engaged, he was more open, he was more appreciative, more grateful, he was frankly more human than I had ever seen him before, and I think that combined with the fact that he's playing pain-free for the first time in a long time.
We will continue our conversation with CBS news correspondent and author Armin Katayan after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Welcome back, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. It is hour number two. We're going to pick up our conversation. CBS News correspondent and author Armin Katayan. And you know what I think, Armin, you were mentioning that he's playing pain-free, but what changed in terms of, was there someone that stepped into his life and helped him step up his game, personally and professionally?
Well, I think it's more about what happened on that side of the road and in Florida. I think that was the bottom for Tiger. And when you think about the fact that he's got two young kids, or kids that are certainly now they're 7 and 10 at this point in time. Is that the kind of father you want to be? Is that the kind of image that you want as it was, you know, just ricocheted around the internet for the better part of 2 or 3 days? I think he looked in the mirror and said, you know, this is not who I want to be. I've been through this once before, back in November of 2009. I don't want to see my life going in this direction. And, Tiger's always had a very tight circle of friends. I put quotes around the word friends. I think they're more sometimes enablers than they are friends.
Yeah.
But the idea that he could begin to write his own narrative and break out of that inner circle that so shapes and controls his life in so many ways, that, I think now that he's healthy, but I think more importantly, emotionally and spiritually, he seems like a different person.
Yeah.
And how long that's going to last, I don't have any idea. But it's so refreshing because you know, for the better part of the first 41 years of his life, he was very robotic, very manufactured in how he interacted with people. And it was, as we lay out in large degree in the book, it led to a very isolated, distrusting existence.
CBS News correspondent and co-author of New York Times bestseller, a new biography on Tiger Woods, Armen Kantayan, is with us tonight, SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. We don't want to get too far into this interview. We would love to connect with you. You can join us live at Twitter, at E Radio Sports, and always go back and listen to our exclusive interview with Armen at podcastarena.com. Okay, so Tiger Woods, he's taking a break right now after his Masters performance, but has committed, Armen, to play in the 2018 U.S. Open at Shinnecock Hills in New York in the middle of June. What is your overall confidence level that perhaps he could win? I mean, there was so much talk, hype, excitement, you know, leading up to the Masters this year.
Well, I mean, it's a great ending. And if you're looking for storybook endings for him to win his 15th major at the U.S. Open at Shinnecock would be unreal. I think he was, in some places, the odds-on favorite to win the Masters, and I think that was people betting with their heart and not their head. There is a formidable, as you well know, a formidable group of young guns now on tour, and you know them by their first names, whether it's Justin or Dustin or John, or you can pick them out, Ricky or Rory, and just pick them out week by week where they're. Jordan, I mean, they're all coming, to your head at one point in time. What's interesting is most of them are there because of the Tiger effect. They grew up idolizing Tiger. And unlike the players that he was playing against, the Ernie Els of the world or the David Duvalls of the world or the Vijay Singhs and dominating them over the course of the better part of two decades, these guys are built like Tiger in many ways, and they've learned from Tiger. They have a killer instinct on the golf course. So I'm not sure that Tiger's ready yet. It's not to say he won't be. It's not to say that he doesn't have the mental capacity to be. He's just a little off. I mean, his driver was fantastic the last day. I think he shot 67.
Was it? Yes.
Yeah. He could have shot 65 real easily. I mean, but his driver's always been the big question mark. But now it's, his irons, which for the period of time that when he really dominated the tour from 99 through like 2009, he was as good an iron player as there was in the game. And he's just not doing that as well. And even though he putted well the final day for some of the Masters, the fact that he was making every single putt of significance for the better part of a decade, that's not there. But, he's 42 years old. He's not the same guy he was when he was in his early to, 20s to his early 30s. But I'll tell you one thing. People can't take their eyes off him. That hasn't changed.
Absolutely.
And the ratings are, they're going through the roof. And if he's in contention on Sunday, which is going to be Father's Day of all days, you can't even imagine what the ratings are going to be like.
Yeah. Hey, I don't want to digress, but you bring up a great point, Armen, talking about this new generation, these younger players, Justin Thomas, John Rahm, they've really been inspired by Tiger Woods. Where do you think the game of golf is right now with this new generation?
Well, I think it's in great shape in terms of the talent level. The charisma level, you got to sometimes wonder where that is. I mean, I've seen Ricky on tour at events, and he is as engaging. He and Phil, to me, stand out as the people's favorites because they're engaged with people after practice rounds, and they'll sit and sign. But there just isn't anybody like Tiger. Tiger was a once in a lifetime. He's like, we liken him to Shakespeare in terms of somebody that you would see or read and will never see or read again. There's just nobody that has the physical component, the game, and it wasn't that he was engaged with people. It was completely opposite. He was almost machine-like in the way that he just assassinated. anybody that was within striking distance of him on Sunday. But I think the game right now is, it's never been healthier financially, that's for sure, in terms of the purses and, you know, the network television contracts are coming up again. But, I you know, diversity, yes, in terms of the in the international component. But the one part of the Tiger effect that never took hold, and the one prediction that Earl made, of the many that he made, did Tiger change the game financially? Yes. Culturally, yes. Socially, yes. Did he change it racially? No. Because there's only there's one African-American golfer on tour right now, regularly, Harold Varner III.
Okay.
And I have been to some of the major junior events, the IMG you know, event in San Diego. They're essentially the World Championship of Golf for Juniors. And you can count the number of African-American, elite African-American golfers on the fingers of one hand. So that was the one part of the narrative that never really broke through for Tiger, because, frankly, Tiger never really embraced his role, his perceived role, in changing the game of golf, the color of the game of golf.
Investigative journalist, CBS News correspondent Armin Katayan is with us tonight at SB Nation Radio. It has just produced a brand new, a new biography on Tiger Woods. So let's move ahead. Let's narrow our focus and talk some more about the book. So much has written, been written about Tiger. How is your book different?
Well, it's different in, God, probably 404 pages. And one of the things that Jeff and I really tried to do was to bring something fresh and new in detail or in interviews on every single page. And given the reviews that have been pretty much rapturous around the world, and the fact as we talk today, the book is sitting at number 3 on the New York Times hardcover bestseller list.
Wow, that's great.
I would say we accomplished that goal in answering a question, really, Elisa, that hasn't been answered in any of the previous books, which really focused on certain periods or sections of Tiger's life, either after he turned pro or after the accident in 09. They never really answered the question of who is Tiger Woods. You know, who's the person? What's the price of genius? And that's where, when you interview 250 people from every walk of Tiger's life, and you interview people like Alicia O'Meara, who became Tiger's second mother when he moved to Isleworth, when Mark O'Meara, the PGA Tour, yes, World Golf Hall of Fame professional, he and his first wife, Alicia, really became Tiger's second parents down there. And you learn a lot from Alicia. You learn a lot from Dina Gravel, who was Tiger's first true love, his first girlfriend, and how they broke up in a heartbreaking way because Dina was perceived as an impediment or an obstacle in Tiger's march into the professional ranks. And Jim Riswald, who wrote the iconic Hello World ad and all the major Tiger Woods, all the Tiger Woods ads for Nike, and Charles Barkley and Hank Haney and Butch Harmon, just seeing Tiger through their eyes. You know, when you do that and you spend 3 years developing relationships with people who have intersected with Tiger at various times of his life and their life, but have never been interviewed before, including a woman, Peggy Lewis, whose house Tiger stayed at Augusta for the better part of 5 years, what her experience, not all that great with Tiger when he stayed there. So you get a 360-degree view of this guy's life, and which no one has ever done before. And it's a life that is tailor-made for a biography of this scope and this size, because it's the rise, the transcendent run that he had at the top of the world, golf and the sports world as a commercial product, and then the epic fall from grace, the reckoning that comes with the public humiliation, his return, troubled as it was at times with pain and everything he was going through, and then the possible redemption in this, as I said, almost storybook comeback. So it's kind of like a Greek tragedy. It has so much to it. And when you're the kind of, to pat ourselves on the back for just a second, when you're the kind of journalist that Jeff and I are, with the kind of experience that we have, particularly having done, between the two of us, 25 nonfiction books, you take on an assignment like this and you spend the better part of 3 years working on it, you produce something that's different. If we hadn't done that, I'd probably be looking at the top of a mountain, looking over the edge, going, okay, here I go.
Yeah. We will continue our conversation with CBS News correspondent and author Armin Katayan after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Welcome back, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. It is hour number two. We're going to pick up our conversation. CBS News correspondent and author Armin Katayan. One of the questions I wanted to ask you tonight is, when did Earl, Tiger's father, when did he realize he had a child that was born for greatness, that he was the chosen one?
Well, that's interesting because one could argue, you know, Earl fell in love with the game of golf around the age of 42 after he'd retired from the military and would come home from his job at McDonnell Douglas out in Orange County, California. And he'd retreat to the garage and just hour after hour hit five irons into a net in the garage, and Tiger would be out there. As a child, he was in a high chair, and he would watch Earl just hit shot after shot after shot after shot. And there's, in the book, we talk about how when you watch something on television as a child, it's different than watching something in real time in front of you. And the brain sees things differently, and it processes things differently when it's done in real time. And as Tiger was watching as a baby, watching Earl hit this one shot over and over and over again, at one point in time, as the story goes, he's about 11 months old. He's literally, at the time, getting fed. Earl would hit a shot, and Tita, his mother, Kapita, would put a spoon of food in Tiger's mouth. He would literally get fed at night in the garage watching Earl swing.
Uh-huh.
And one day, you know, Tiger crawls out of the high chair, as Earl tells it, you know, picks up a club, a sawed-off club that Earl had set aside for the day that Tiger was going to play, and takes a perfect swing and hits the ball into the net. And then Earl cries out, you know, Tita, get out here, get out here. We have a genius on our hands. Wow. And at that moment in time, that's where Earl and Tiger and his mother, Kultita, became a team. And literally, Tiger's first name is Eldrick. The E in Eldrick stands for Earl, and the K in Eldrick stands for Katilda. So it's a unique name, but literally and figuratively, Tiger was surrounded by his parents from the time he was born. And once he showed the first sign of having that kind of natural ability, that was all Earl needed. That became their focus. To the detriment of their marriage, frankly, it became more of a business partnership than an intimate romantic relationship. But they poured everything they could into their son. And in many ways, as Earl said in 1996 to Gary Smith in this, you know, famous, iconic Sports Illustrated Sportsman of the Year story, Tiger is the chosen one. Mm-hmm. You know, he has the power to impact nations, and Earl likened him to Gandhi and Buddha. I mean, not Arthur Ashe or Muhammad Ali, to literally people that changed the world. And Tiger, to a large degree, one can argue, lived up to a lot of that billing. But that came at a tremendous personal price.
Can you share how the dynamic, the relationship between his mother, Tiger's mom, and his father, was it different? Was it the same? I mean, how did they discipline him?
No, it was very, unique. I mean, and you know, when you think of child stars and you think of families and you think of, you know, Michael Jackson's father and you think of Todd Marinovich and his father, Marv Marinovich, and you think of Serena Williams, and Venus Williams and Richard Williams, their father. There's a history of, and Andre Agassi and his father. There's a history of dominant fathers and tortured sons. This one was, and daughters. This one was different, because Tiger was getting it from both ends. Tiger's father, Earl, was a man who was a visionary in terms of what he thought his son could do. He was a out front spokesman, almost to Tiger's detriment as to what his son was going to accomplish. He gave his son a great passion for the game and also a love of practice. On the other end, Clotilde, Tita, she was the one that gave him the killer instinct, the indomitable will, the right. Step on their neck, take their heart kind of philosophy that Tiger brought to the game. So he got something from both parents, but at the same time, Earl was a wanton womanizer. He was a heavy drinker. He didn't treat Tita with a great deal of respect. There's first-person accounts in our book of Earl's verbal abuse of Tita in front of other people.
Right.
He didn't treat his mother with a great deal of respect. And Tiger saw all that because there were no other children. He was an only child and in a house that was 1,474 square feet. There weren't many places to hide there in that home on Teakwood in Cypress, California. So, and as soon as Tiger turned pro, Earl and Tita separated. She got her own home, a big home in Tustin, California, and Earl stayed in the family home, in the childhood home of Tiger. And they didn't go their separate ways, but they certainly had separate lives.
Armin Katayan been with us, SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show. We've been highlighting his extraordinary new biography. You got to go out and get a copy of that. Of course, it is Tiger Woods. Armin, a true pleasure to have you with us. I know we went a little bit long tonight, but it is a fascinating read. And of course, it's published by Simon & Schuster. You can go anywhere online and get a copy of it. Congratulations, Armin. We'd love to have you back and talk some more, okay?
Big E, nice to talk to you.
Absolutely. That, of course, was CBS News correspondent Armin Katayan. Go ahead and get a copy of the brand new book, a new biography on Tiger Woods. Much more coming your way here at hour number two, SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. Come on back.
Hi, this is Mike Herzing. Let's Talk Wheels, an automotive tip brought to you by the great folks at Jeep. Car accidents happen every day. Odds are you'll have one someday. I hope it's a small one. But if it happens, well, you know what to do. Please tell us to make sure no one's hurt and move our cars out of the way of traffic, if we can. Then, call 911 and they'll tell us what to do next. I tell my family to stay calm and make sure everybody's safe. Then, get your phone and start taking photos and recording contact information of the other driver and any witnesses. Then, get photos of the scene and the other car. Don't admit blame or blame anybody. We've all seen stories change and people drive away, never to be heard of again. And you're the one left on the side of the road with a wrecked car. But car is just stuff. It can be replaced, but people can't. So, let's be safe. Mike Herzing, Let's Talk Wheels, an automotive tip brought to you by the great folks at Jeep. For more tips, go to the new letstalkwheels.com. That's the new letstalkwheels.com.
Spring is the season for Jeep brand vehicles, a time to reawaken your outdoor spirit and take advantage of the great deals on our legendary SUVs, only for a limited time at the Jeep Spring Sales Event. Really bloom this season with a luxurious Jeep Grand Cherokee. Its sophisticated design and superior capability has helped make it the most awarded SUV ever. Or greet the change in weather and terrain with the available legendary 4x4 capability of the Jeep Renegade. Rain or shine, it's got you covered. And no matter how far your spring adventure takes you, know you can always find your way home in a Jeep Compass, who's rated top of its class in technology and connectivity. Giving freedom a whole new meaning.
Hey!
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, Alyssa Walker-Campbell, welcome back. SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio, and the Big E Sports Show. Before we get underway with our next interview, think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. They are close, convenient. They are known for their guaranteed everyday low price. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store today. O'Reilly's, better parts, better prices every single day. Well, things are certainly heating up. 2018 NBA playoffs are underway. We're very excited. Of course, we're based here in Houston. And right now, we're going to shift gears a bit. If you listen to my show every Friday night, we always take time for a special book review, and we have selected one that I know you guys are going to enjoy. It is a fascinating read. It is titled The Soul of Basketball, The Epic Showdown Between LeBron, Kobe, Doc, and Dirk That Saved the NBA. It's a true pleasure to have with us tonight, and that is prolific sports writer, author. He's been in our business for many, many years, Ian Thompson. Good evening, Ian, and first time on the show. Welcome.
Oh, thanks for having me, Alyssa. I appreciate it.
Well, it's great to have you on. Congratulations on your book. We're very excited to do a deep dive and do a review on it. But first of all, we are SB Nation Radio. We're based here in Houston. Our city has been on a roll. You know, the Astros, they won the World Series in 2017. And the Rockets, they're playing pretty darn good right now. What say you as an NBA junkie? Are they going to win a world championship? I know you're in Boston. Kind of help us out here.
Yeah. I don't know how much I can help you, but I don't think they need the help either. They've been the best team all year. And I think the whole basketball world, not just here in America, but all around the world, people are really looking forward to seeing the Rockets play the Warriors. That's the series everyone is looking ahead to, skipping ahead. And I mean, it's going to be tight. And if it goes to seven, well, there's a home court advantage for Houston. So it would be a tremendous story if the Rockets were to win it, for sure. Mike D'Antoni, their coach, has never won. James Harden has been pushing to become one of the elite players. Going all the way back to Hakeem Olajuwon's days, it would be a great thing for Houston.
You know, while we have you on the program tonight, I have to say one of the feel-good stories so far in the playoffs has really been the New Orleans Pelicans, you know, just kind of the turnaround that they have had this year, especially late in the season. What say you?
Oh, no doubt. And their best player, Anthony Davis, is, I don't think I've ever used this term before about a star athlete. He's a sweetheart.
He's just a great guy. Okay. Yeah, that's good.
But he's just a great guy and loves being in New Orleans, has been, as a young player, just starting his career, has been very plugged into the community. After all the natural disasters that they've been facing post Katrina, much as people in Houston can relate to, you've seen this trend in the NBA in recent years, Alyssa, where the best players leave small markets to go to bigger markets, and he insists he doesn't want to do that. Of course, he wants to win, and now they're winning. Now they're in the second round of the playoffs because of him. And he looks like a guy that's really turning the corner.
It's going to be an exciting matchup as you're talking about the second round of the NBA playoffs, Warriors-Pelicans. And also, give me a hit, too. We've got to give some love to Alvin Gentry. I mean, it's great to see that he's getting a reprieve and a second chance, and he's getting things done, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I think we all remember when he was in the locker room celebrating his championship with the Warriors.
We sure did.
He looked into the camera and said, AD, we're coming back here. Well, they're not at the NBA Finals. Yeah, but they are coming back there. They're coming back to play the Warriors in the second round.
Hey, national sports writer, author Ian Thompson with us tonight, SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. If you want to go back and listen to this interview, this exclusive one, podcastarena.com, and also give us a follow at Twitter. We are live, as always, at E Radio Sports. We have extended an invitation to Ian Thompson because you know what? Another impressive release. The title of his latest book is The Soul of Basketball, The Epic Showdown Between LeBron, Kobe, Doc, and Dirk That Saved the NBA. Talk to me about, Ian, what was the inspiration of this book? Because you really take a fascinating look at some of the game's biggest names and some of the most important names in the NBA.
Yeah, you know, it revolves around that 2010-11 season when the NBA looked like it was in trouble. LeBron James, the star player, the most promising player, 25 years old. He was supposed to be the next Michael Jordan, and everybody hated him. He'd gone on TV with his self-made show. He created a TV show all for himself. to exploit the popularity of his free agency, all the interest in where he was going to go as a free agent. And he announced he was taking his talents to South Beach, and the whole country seemed to turn against him. The next day in Miami, they have a rally. He says it's going to be easy to win championships. We're going to win not five, not six, not seven championships. This from a guy who had not come close to winning one championship. So people were really turned off. And on top of it, the NBA was losing a lot of money at that time and was heading towards a lockout. They were going to shut down their business after the season, even though there was a global recession going on. So why is the league so popular now? Why is it flying so high now, just a few years later? And I think it's, and the book lays out this case, thanks to all the people who've opened up to me in it.
Yeah.
It lays out the case that all the changes happened during that season when LeBron absorbed a lot of hard lessons. He took a lot of hard knocks from his rivals, Kobe Bryant, Doc Rivers, the Celtics, Dirk Nowitzki of the Mavericks, and other players, other coaches, other teams. And he also was mentored by Pat Riley and the Heat. And by looking into his own heart, by realizing where he'd gone wrong, you know, he sort of was able to figure himself out and live the American dream through basketball. It really is a story. Everybody in this book who opened up to me, they're explaining to me how they have figured out who they are and what they want to be through the sport of basketball. That's why basketball exists to them.
You highlight LeBron, thinking about the 2010-2011 season, but really this was, as it's been described, as a watershed year for pro basketball. It's incredible. I'm going to admit, we're in Houston, but I am a big Dallas Mavericks fan, and I certainly remember when they won that first NBA title in 2011. Talk to me and all the listeners tonight. What did you share about Dirk?
You know, that took a lot of guts for you to admit that.
Hey, I'm a gutsy gal. Okay.
So Dirk is the immigrant story. This book lays out basketball as a platform for the American dream, for its players, for its coaches, everybody involved in basketball. And Dirk is a guy that grew up playing basketball as his second language, and he had to teach himself how to play. He and his mentor, this retired German guy named German player, Holger Geschwindner, who had, he had invented a new way of shooting the basketball. He invented it. He tailored it to Dirk's specifications physically. And they practiced this every day for years, these mind-numbing drills for balance and trajectory and how to get off your shot when you're getting pushed around. All these different things that they would work on, just the two of them on the court, day after day for years. And Dirk had to talk himself into becoming a star all the way along. He didn't believe that he could compete with the best Americans when he first came over. He was afraid of it, frankly, he admits. And step by step, he talked himself into becoming the star. He's a very humble guy. And at the end, when he finally wins the championship, he's just overcome with emotion. He doesn't know how to deal with it. Mm-hmm. It's too much for him that his dream has come true. And it's a real juxtaposition between LeBron, who was seeking out the cameras at that time, because LeBron didn't yet know who he was as a person, as a player, versus Dirk, who had come to find out who he was through basketball and was so overwhelmed by it all that he almost didn't go back on the stage to accept the trophy with his teammates.
You know, and I was going to ask you that. I mean, how is Dirk, help our listeners understand how Dirk is different than some of the other, the biggest names in the game?
It's a great question, and I think a lot of it has to do with this, with the way basketball is viewed around the world. Here, it's such a big business, right? And even the high school player now are viewed as future stars, future millionaires. Everything's in the context of money here. As a result of all the success of the NBA, but we see it as a business. And around the world, there is not a lot of money in basketball. There are professional leagues everywhere in the world, but most of them lose money. None of them make anywhere near the money that we see from the NBA or even the NCAA. And so they look at basketball as a theater to the American way of life. That's why they love it. It's when you live overseas and you're watching an NBA game from that distance, you're seeing an NBA team as sort of a melting pot of players from all over the world, all different colors, all shapes and sizes, all cultures, all religions, everybody having to get along Everyone is pursuing his own dream, but doing it for a cause bigger than himself, the cause of the team. And I think that's a really powerful message, a really powerful symbol that has driven the growth of basketball around the world. It surely inspired Dirk. And when he came here, he came as an idealist about basketball. He was not interested in making commercials. Of course, he wanted the money, but that was not what was driving him. And at the end, when he plays LeBron in the 2011 NBA Finals, you see one guy that's idealistic and the other guy that's been led astray, LeBron, by commercialism, by the decision, by pretending to be someone he isn't in order to sell himself as the next Michael Jordan. When Dirk beats LeBron, it turns out to be the best thing that ever happened to LeBron. That's what LeBron himself said the following year when he finally won the championship. He looked back and said, losing that finals in 2011 to the Mavericks was, it really helped me. It forced me to take stock, to become a better person, a better player. And because he became that person, that player, I think that has a lot to do with why the NBA is so popular today.
You know, Ian, you had the opportunity in this book to interview the biggest names in sports. Of course, the book we're talking about and shining the spotlight on is The Soul of Basketball, the epic showdown between LeBron, Kobe, Doc, and Dirk that saved the NBA. Did you have a chance to talk to Dirk's owner, Mark Cuban, and what did he say about Dirk and just what he has meant to this organization?
Yeah, I've spent a lot of time with Mark over the years, and he was very helpful for this book as well. And when Mark Cuban took control of the Mavericks, growth of basketball around the world, it surely inspired Dirk. And, the way franchises are run in pro sports, he examined everything that his new franchise did, and if it made sense, they kept doing it, and if it didn't, he came up with a better way of doing it. And I really look at him as one of the most influential guys around. The problem was he was also the biggest personality at the franchise. Well, to win an NBA championship, your star has to be the biggest personality, right? Like Jerry Reinsdorf of the Bulls was not winning the championships for the Chicago Bulls. It was Michael Jordan, and they needed Dirk to become that guy. And they always wondered if he would, because Dirk is so humble and he didn't see himself as a star. And then one day during one game in that 2010-11 season, Cuban is sitting by the team bench and yelling out like he always does, like he always will. And Dirk had made a mistake, and the other team had scored a basket, and Cuban was yelling at Dirk, don't make that mistake, whatever he said. And Dirk, with one hand, is inbounding the ball, and with the other hand, he takes his mouthpiece out and he yells out, shut the F up, a Cuban.
Oh, my.
And everybody on the team is kind of looking down at their feet, kind of wishing that moment would go away, but they're also saying, you go, Dirk. This is Dirk now turning the corner and taking over, taking control, taking command of the team. And that change in Dirk was crucial to them winning the championship.
We are shining the spotlight on a brand new book by Ian Thompson. It is titled The Soul of Basketball, the epic showdown between LeBron, Kobe, Doc, and Dirk that saved the NBA. We will continue that conversation after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Welcome back. Hour number two, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Right now, we're going to rejoin national sports writer and author Ian Thompson. You know, you talk about spending a lot of time with Mark Cuban for this book, talking about, you know, Dirk and helping us understand him better. What about, let's go back for a moment, what about LeBron? I mean, what did Pat Riley share about LeBron?
Yeah, Pat Riley, who I spent years trying to convince to talk to me for this book, he finally did, and he really opened up.
Nice.
It went from zero to 60, and we spent 9 hours talking for this
book.
Did
you really?
And
wow.
Yeah, and he was a huge help. And he detailed every bit of it, how he first got the idea to recruit these three guys in 2010, the three guys being LeBron, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh. They were all free agents at the same time. And he got the idea 4 years before he actually recruited them, so in 2006. And then he spent 2 years before he recruited them just building up the cap space and making trades and setting everything up to go for it. And that took an amazing amount of guts to do that, because no one was imagining that you could go out and sign three free agents at the same time, much less the top three in that class, and it was the best free agent class the NBA had ever seen. So basically, he was going to take the top three away from everybody else, and he gambled everything on it. And he told me the stories of how he met with LeBron to try to convince him to do it. And there was one point where he's in the meeting room in Cleveland. It's a three-hour presentation, and he says to LeBron, you know, I can understand if you're going to be afraid here. There ought to be some fear built into this, because if you leave Cleveland to come here to Miami, there's going to be a lot of controversy. You're going to be in the middle of a storm. And LeBron and his manager, Maverick Carter, were both scoffing at Pat Riley in the meeting. Fear? What fear? What do we have to be afraid of? They had no idea what they were getting themselves into. They had no idea that LeBron was about to become the most hated athlete in America by doing this. And yet it was necessary. It was necessary for him to become a champion. He hadn't come close to winning a championship. He needed to learn how to do it. He had everything else going for him except for that knowledge. And he got it from being in Miami.
It is titled The Soul of Basketball, the epic showdown between LeBron, Kobe, Doc, and Dirk that saved the NBA. We have been going one-on-one with Ian Thompson, national sports writer, author, and you got to go out and get a copy of this book because it really is an amazing inside look on how the NBA really works. And just really also, you know, we didn't get a chance to talk about this, but just how the league has progressed and evolved throughout the year. So, Ian, it's an open invitation. We'd love to have you back. Thank you, sir.
Oh, me too. Thank you so much, Alyssa. I appreciate it.
You bet. That, of course, was national sports writer and author of his brand new book, The Soul of Basketball, the epic showdown between LeBron, Kobe, Doc, and Dirk that saved the NBA. Ian Thompson, a true pleasure to have him with us tonight. And, of course, a big thank you to all of our amazing guests right here at the next generation of sports radio. That is SB Nation Radio.